Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
December the 6th.
We are in Malachim Beis. We are Perek Yud Beis, chapter 12. We are actually going to move forward tonight. Yehoash is now the king over Yehuda, over the southern kingdom. He is the king. He lived for 6 years in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in the Holy of Holies, with his wet nurse. And at when he turned 7 years old, Yehoyada the Kohen Gadol orchestrated a coup and got Asalia killed, the evil woman killed. And Yehoash's aunt was the one, his wife, the wife of the Kohen Gadol. They saved Yehoash, and now Yehoash is king. But he's 7 years old. 7 year old king obviously needs other people to help him, and Yehoash was helped specifically by the Yehoyada the Kohen Gadol himself. So Yehoash was in a very good position because Yehoyada Kohen Gadol was first of all the Kohen Gadol. Second of all, Yehoyada Kohen Gadol was also the greatest Talmud Chacham, the greatest Torah scholar of his generation. So here you have in a very unusual situation in which all three Kisarim, all three crowns, the crown of Kuhuna, the crown of Malchus, of royalty, and the crown of Torah, are in the same place, even though they're not technically worn by the same person. Yehoyada Kohen Gadol is wearing two of the crowns. Again, wearing a crown is a figurative. It's not literal. But Yehoyada Kohen Gadol is the Kohen Gadol and also wearing the crown of Torah. The Mesorah of Torah, the transmission of Torah, runs through Yehoyada Kohen Gadol. He's listed it by the Rambam as one of the people that through whom the Torah passes. And but because he is not just the primary advisor of Yehoash, but he's the mentor of Yehoash. Yehoash is only 7 years old when he becomes king, and Yehoyada the Kohen Gadol is the one upon whom Yehoash relies for advice and guidance. Then really, Yehoyada Kohen Gadol, in a certain way, is even wearing the crown of Malchus, of royalty, but in a kosher way. He's not usurping the throne. He wasn't pushing the king to do things that the king shouldn't do. He was advising him and guiding the king to run the country according to the Torah. The country, therefore, enjoyed a very special number of years, as we will see. Yehoash rules for 40 years, and this is a very good time for the kingdom of Yehuda because it's being run according to the Torah. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives much bracha to the land, and it's a kind of country that we expect there to be in Eretz Yisrael. So this perek that we're going to learn tonight is not going to have any dramatic wars. It's not going to have any dramatic intrigue because that stuff didn't go on. What we are going to have is specific, sometimes actually detailed discussion of particular laws having to do with the Beis HaMikdash, because Yehoash was the king who dedicated himself to the Beis HaMikdash. I'm talking about to the building, the Beis HaMikdash itself, more than any other king, perhaps since Shlomo HaMelech, who built the Beis HaMikdash. Yehoash is known as the king of the Beis HaMikdash, meaning the one who focused on the Beis HaMikdash. His having lived there for 6 years in the Kodesh HaKadosh, where no one else could go, obviously ties him in a very special way to the Beis HaMikdash. And the fact that he's clearly so connected to the Kohen Gadol, that also does so as well. So that's what we have in this parak. This parak, which we're about to read tonight, is the Haftorah for Parshas Shkolim. Parshas Shkolim is read on the Shabbos of or preceding Rosh Chodesh Adar. And the reason why it is read at that time is because that is the half shekel that we all have to give each year is given by Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So a month before, which is Rosh Chodesh Adar, Parashas Shkolim is read to remind everybody to get their half shekel into the Beis HaMikdash. So this one, as you'll see, it's going to deal with money of the Beis HaMikdash, therefore is read as the Haftorah for Parashas Shkolim. Pasuk Aleph, verse 1. Ben Shemash, in Perikud Beis. Ben Shemash Sharm Yehosh B'Molcho. Yehosh was 7 years old when he became king. The Navi is emphasizing that to us. He's a young king, and he needs guidance and mentorship. Bishnas Sheva Yehu Malach Yehosh. Yehosh became king in the 7th year of Yehu. Yehu had killed out the entire family of Achav. And in the process, he also killed out the family of, or much of the family of David HaMelech as well, the evil ones. And then Asaliah finished the job. And that's why Yehoash had to go into hiding. So in the 7th year of Yehu, Yehoash becomes king. V'arboim shana malach b'Yerushalayim. He rules in Yerushalayim for 40 years. We haven't had stability like that for a while. Not since Yehoshaphat. We haven't had in the past couple of generations. Yehoram, the son of Yehoshaphat, did not have that kind of stability. Neither did Yehoachaz or Achazio after Yehoram. So here we have stability, a 40-year reign of Yehoash. V'shem Imo, and the name of his mother was Tzivya, mi Be'er Sheva, was Tzivya who was from Be'er Sheva. The name Tzivya comes from here. She is the mother of Yehoash, the king. Vayas Yehoash ha-yashar b'nei Hashem. Yehoash does what is straight in the eyes of Hashem. Kol yom of all his days. So he's a tzaddik, a king who is a tzaddik. Asher ho-rohu Yehoyada ha-kohen, that he was directed by Yehoyada the kohen. Rak ha-bomos lo saru. The only thing that is critical here is that the bomos is the private altars that people had. Those were not removed. People would still offer sacrifices and burn offerings on bamos, which is wrong. People shouldn't do that.
To Hashem.
It is not about Azara. It is to Hashem. It is still wrong. It shouldn't be done. It is a problem. It's not a horrific problem, meaning it's not about Azara. It's not what's been going on in the country for the past number of years. Things are much, much, much better. But there is still this issue that people are still involved in the bamos. Now, as we will see, not tonight, but as we will see, Yehoash does very, very well as king. He's a tzaddik until Yehoyada, the Kohen Gadol, dies. And that's why it says in Pasuk Gimel, verse 3, all his days, he did the straight was in the eyes of Hashem, all his days that he was directed or shown by Yehoyada the Kohen. Once Yehoyada dies, Yehoash does do something wrong. It will cost him his life, as we will see later. So Yehoash is remembered as a tzaddik king, but unfortunately, at the very end of his reign, as we will see, he does do something wrong and it will cost him his life. After all, even though he ruled for 40 years, but he became king at 7. So that means he dies when he's 47 years old, which is still not that old. Even in those days, that's not a very long life. And that will be because of something he'll do wrong. But that's not going to be tonight's shir. We'll see that mitzvah Hashem next time. Pasuk, hey, verse 5. Vayomer Yehoash el ha-kohanim. Yehoash said to the kohanim, kol kesef ha-kadoshim, all money, of all the sanctified money, asher yuvaves Hashem, that comes to the house of Hashem, kesef over, money that literally this means that passes through. How do they translate kesef over?
Pass, can account.
Okay. Ish kesef nafshos erko. Every man the value of his soul. Talk about that in a minute. Kol kesef ashayale alev ish. All money that will enter the heart of man, lavi beis Hashem, to bring to the house of Hashem. Various monies are being referred to over here, and the Gemara explains which monies we mean. I'm going to read one more pasuk before we explain what money we're talking about over here. But all that money that he's discussing, yikhu lahem ha-kohanim, the kohanim should take for themselves, ish me es makaro, each man, each kohen, from the person who he is friendly with, to be makir, somebody means to know somebody, to recognize somebody. So each kohen should take from his acquaintance that money they're bringing. Vehem and the Kohanim Yechazku as Bera Kabayis will strengthen the weaknesses of the house. L'cholai Sheimatzei Shambadak, any weakness that they find in the Beis Hamikdash. The physical structure of the Beis Hamikdash was finally showing signs of wear after years, after being built by Shlomo HaMelech. The Beis Hamikdash for the first time needs an upkeep. It needs a
maintenance.
It needs maintenance. So there is essentially a capital campaign in order to fix up the Beis HaMikdash. Now we know the Beis HaMikdash is a spiritual place. It is a physical building, but it is a physical building that is imbued with spirituality. For example, we know that the Gemara tells us that as long as the Shekhinah, Hashem's divine presence, was resting in the Beis HaMikdash, it could not be burned down. It couldn't be destroyed. In order for first Nebuchadnezzar and then later the Romans to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, first the Shekhinah had to depart, then the building could be destroyed. So here, if there is a need for fixing up maintenance of the building, that implies that there is something spiritually amiss that caused a weakness in the Beis HaMikdash. So we don't have to make any wild assumptions over here. We can simply say that the deterioration of the country in the previous several years before Yehoash becomes king caused a weakness in the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash was not destroyed, Baruch Hashem, Chas V'Shalom, it was not destroyed, but the fact that the Jews as a whole were so involved in idolatry, that started to show itself. Cracks here, stones that weren't solid there, that kind of stuff going on because of the fact that the country had slipped into Averus. Now that Yehoash has brought the country out of it, but the physical structure needs to be fixed. So he is instructing the Kohanim how to do it. So now, since this is the first time that the Beis HaMikdash needs maintenance, so how do you do it? What money do you use? So Rashi explains that there are three different monies being mentioned over here in these psukim. One is the half shekel that everybody brings every year. That's the kesef over, the money that passes through. Then there is the Kesef, the nafshos erko, the value of one's soul. If someone says that I want to give my erech, my value, to the Beis HaMikdash. So if you look in Parshas Bechukosai in the Torah, you'll see the Torah tells you how much money you have to give depending on, you can pledge your own erech, your own value. You can pledge someone else's Erech. I can say, I want to give so-and-so's Erech to the Beis HaMikdash. And the Torah there lists, depending on how old the person is, and depending on their gender, how much money that is worth. It's not specific to the person. It is a general thing. So if a person pledges that they want to give the value of a man who is between the ages of 20 and 60 to the Beis HaMikdash, then they owe the Beis HaMikdash 50 shkalim. That's the value the Torah gives to that erech. So, and there's various numbers given over there in Parshas Bechukosai. So that is meant over here as well. Money that people give because they decide that they want to offer the value of themselves or somebody else to the Beis HaMikdash. And the third set of money that is being described over here is the Berak HaBayis, which means somebody says, I pledge this item or this money to the upkeep of the Beis HaMikdash. Person can do that. Right? You can pledge an animal for a carbon. You can also say, here I have $1,000 and I pledge it to the Beis HaMikdash for the Beis HaMikdash to use for its own upkeep. Or I own a field and I give it to the Beis HaMikdash for the Beis HaMikdash's upkeep, which means the Beis HaMikdash will decide, the treasurer of the Beis HaMikdash will decide whether to work the field and make profit off of whatever the field grows and use that money for the upkeep of the Beis HaMikdash, or turn around and resell the land and keep the proceeds for the upkeep of the Beis HaMikdash. So those are different monies that are being mentioned over here. Now, just a word about the half shekel. The half shekel is used to buy karbonos, because there are karbonos that are communal karbonos. Let's say the karbon hatamid, the daily sacrifice. Whose sacrifice is that? It's mine. It's yours, and it's yours, and it's yours, and it's theirs, and it's theirs. It's all of ours. So how is that paid for? It's paid for with our half shekel. The half shekel pays for all the communal sacrifices. The musaf sacrifice of Shabbos or Yontif or Rosh Chodesh, that's a communal sacrifice. So that's paid for with the half shekel. However, when the half shekel is given, there's a lot more money from the half shekel than is needed for all the karbonos of the year. Baruch Hashem, there's a lot of Jews, there's a lot of half shekels, and therefore there's more money than is needed. So what happens is they take a trumas halishka. The word truma, like with grain, you tithe, you take some off. Well, truma means to take off a portion. So what they do is they take all the truma, all the shkalim, they put it in a big pile, and they come in and they siphon off a certain amount of that money. That money is used for karbonos. But then there's leftover money. What happens to the leftover money? So leftover money is used for the needs of the Beis HaMikdash. Various types of needs. And there's a whole Mishnah in Meseches Shkalim, makes sense, in Meseches Shkalim, that discusses, all the Mishnah discusses what happens with the leftover money, what about the leftover money from this pile, from that pile, what happens to that leftover money? So part of that money is used for the upkeep of the Beis HaMikdash. So the money over here that's being discussed are the monies that are allocated for the upkeep of the Beis HaMikdash. But Yehoash had a very specific way he wanted this done. He did not tell the Kohanim, use the money for the upkeep of the Beis HaMikdash. Remember, no one has needed to upkeep the Beis HaMikdash before. This is the first time. So what do you do? So he said a system like this. Every Kohen has a friend or friends. You have a lot of acquaintances. People come to the Beis HaMikdash and they offer money. Or they're in their hometowns and they pledge money. So he said like this. You're a Kohen. So the people who pledge money to the Beis HaMikdash, they're going to give you the money, which makes sense, right? If I live in Tveria and I pledge money to the Beis HaMikdash, well, you know, in the absence of wire transfers, how do I get that money to the Beis HaMikdash? So I could wait till I go to the Beis HaMikdash anyway. Or I have my buddy, the Kohen, my next door neighbor, who's going to the Beis HaMikdash tomorrow. So I say, listen, here's the money I pledged. Can you take it from me to the Beis HaMikdash? No reason not to do that. So what Yehoash said is each Kohen should be the address for this money that in their hometowns, people give them whatever money they pledge to the Beis HaMikdash for these purposes. But he went a step further. He didn't just say the money should be given to these Kohanim and then they will simply be the messenger boys to bring the money to the Beis HaMikdash, the courier. He said, no. The Kohen should pocket the money, keep it for themselves. In exchange for pocketing the money, the Kohanim will be responsible from their own pockets to upkeep the Beis HaMikdash, which means that ultimately the responsibility to fix the Beis HaMikdash for any kind of problems that there are is the Kohanim's problem. Collectively, they pay out of pocket to fix the Beis HaMikdash. How can we make them do that? We can't make them do that. It's not their problem. Because all the money that the people pledge for that purpose goes to the Kohen as a gift. Which means that sometimes the Kohen will end up with more money and sometimes the Kohen will end up with less money, depending on what's going on, depending how much upkeep is necessary in the Beis HaMikdash. Either the Kohen, if very little upkeep is necessary, the Kohanim will end up getting extra money. It'll be a bonus. If the Beis HaMikdash needs more upkeep, then the Kohanim will end up losing some money. but the responsibility of fixing the Beis HaMikdash will be the Kohanim's problem. It's not that there's a treasury and someone else has to be in charge of fixing up the Beis HaMikdash. Now, what this does is it eliminates a whole set of bookkeeping. Because if it's donations, and the donations then have to be processed, and then every time something is spent, there has to be a receipt and work through, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? That's a whole bookkeeping system, which we're all used to. Every business has it. Every nonprofit has it. Every household has it, right? But this way, you eliminate that. People donate, it goes to the Kohanim, and it goes to their pockets. And everybody knows this. It's not tricking anybody. Everybody knows that's what happens. But in exchange for that, the Kohanim have the responsibility squarely on their shoulders to keep up the Beis HaMikdash, which also means that the buck stops with the Kohanim. So that if Yehoash comes to the Beis HaMikdash and he sees a crack on the wall, he calls over the Kohanim and says, what's going on here? It's their responsibility. It's not the Bnei Yisrael's responsibility. It's their responsibility. How are they getting paid for it? They're getting paid for it because everybody who donates money comes to them. That's the system that Yehoash set up. And it worked very well, at least for the first number of years.
He has a central bank.
What's that?
He has a central bank.
Essentially, right. So now the Pasuk says in Pasuk Zion verse 7, Vayhi bishnas esrim v'shalosh shana l'melech Yehoash. It was the 23rd year of the king Yehoash. Lo chizku ha'kohanim es berek habayis. The Kohanim did not fix up the weaknesses of the Beis HaMikdash. They did not do their job. Now, it doesn't tell us why they didn't do their job, but they didn't do their job. So, it could be because they didn't get enough money from everybody else and they felt they didn't want to pay out of pocket. Could be. Could be they simply got lazy and didn't do their job. Whatever it is, they didn't do it. The Beis HaMikdash was neglected. So, therefore, Yehoash changed the rule. He changed his system. And now, it did become much more what we're used to. Vayikra HaMelech Yehoash LiYehoyada HaKohen V'LaKohanim. The King Yehoash called to Yehoyada the Kohen and to the other Kohanim. Vayomar Aleim, he said to them, Madua Einchem Mechazkim Es Berek HaBayis. How come you're not strengthening the weaknesses of the Bayis? V'Ato, and now, Al Tikhu Chesef Meis Makarechem. Do not take the money from those who you know from your acquaintances. Rather, Ki Leverek HaBayis Titznuhu, now you must give that money directly to the treasury of the Beis HaMikdash to fix up the Beis HaMikdash. We're going to create a fund, a Beis HaMikdash fund called Berek HaBayis, Weaknesses of the House, and all you're going to be is the courier. That's all. When people give you money, you are to deposit it in this account, and that will be the account that will be used to fix up the Beis HaMikdash. We're actually going to hire people now who will become responsible to fix up the Beis HaMikdash. Vayayosu HaKohanim, and the Kohanim began... consented. Livil tikachas kasef meisam, to not take the money for themselves from the nation. Uvil tichazekis berek habayis, and also not to be the ones to fix up the berek habayis. Now I want you to notice, the Kohanim consented to not take the money for themselves and not fix up the Beis HaMikdash. You realize that it was a privilege to be the ones to fix up the Beis HaMikdash. That is your responsibility, is a privilege. So the Kohanim, when Yehoash changed the rule, now the Kohanim consented not to take the money for themselves. We understand you have to consent to that, right? Really, you'd rather have the money for yourself, but now you can't. They consented. But they also consented to give up that privilege of having the responsibility of fixing up the Beis HaMikdash. Because now it's not going to be the Kohanim who are going to do it. Now,
not everyone knows how to fix things.
Right. But it means who's responsible to make sure it gets done. Okay. Right?
Were they allowed to call commoners to fix it?
Yes. Yeah. They were allowed to call commoners. But it's not the commoners' problem. It's the quantum problem. Now it's going to be everybody's problem. Now that we have a new system where there's a new fund called the Berek HaBayis Fund, Yehoyada the Kohen Gadol comes up with a concept that was not known until the time of Yehoyada, but today, every school child knows about it. Everybody knows about it. Yehoyada the Kohen Gadol created the Pushka. The Pushka was created by Yehoyada Kohen Gadol, as you'll read right here. Vayikach Yehoyada Kohen Aron Echad. And Yehoyada the Kohen took one Aron, a box. Vayikov Chor B'daltoni. He bore a hole into its door. Vayiteno so Eitzel HaMizbeach Miyamin. He put it next to the Mizbeach on the right. Bevoish Beis Hashem, when any man would come to the Beis HaMikdash, v'nasnu shama kohanim shomrei asaf, and that's where the kohanim, those who were the ones in charge of the money, of the fund, es kol hakesef, shomrei asaf means those who guard the doorpost, means those, the kohanim who are on duty, they will put there, as called a kesef, a muva beis Hashem, they'll put all the money that is brought to the house of Hashem. So we now have a pushka, it was a large box with a slot that they could put in the money. And that's where it would be, and it would just build up in that pushka. And then, Yud Aleph, Vayihin, it was kirosam kirava kesef baron, when they saw that there was a lot of money in the box. Vayal sofer hamelech v'akohen agadol, then the scribe of the king and the kohen gadol would come. Vayatsuru vayimnu, and they would bag up and count. Es hakesef hanimtza beis Hashem, the kesef, the money that was found in the house of Hashem. So now they would count it, and they would count it with at least two people to make sure that it was that there were checks and balances, make sure that the money was accurate. They would give the money that was then counted, that was accounted for. Al yedei osei hamelacha, in the hands of those doing the work, hamufkadim beis Hashem, that were appointed in the house of Hashem. So there were people who were appointed, they now receive the money. These aren't the ones actually doing the work. These are the ones who were now given the task of finding craftsmen, vayotzi uhu, and they would spend it lecharashei ha'etz, for the carpenters, for labonim, and the builders, ha'osim beis Hashem, for those who were working the house of Hashem. So now you'd have people who were appointed as, we'll call them general contractors, who would then hire various laborers to do the various parts, skilled laborers, unskilled laborers, to do the various parts of whatever building needed to be done. Yud Gimel 13, v'lagodrim, and for those who build walls, u'lechotzvei ha'evan, those who hew the stones, v'liknos eitzim, and to buy wood, v'avnei machtsev, and stones that would be chiseled, l'chazek esberek beis Hashem, to strengthen the weaknesses of the house of Hashem, u'lechol asher yeitzei alavayis l'chazka, and any kind of spending for the house to strengthen the house. So that's what the money was used for. What was the money not used for? The next pasuk, Ach lo ye'aseh beis Hashem, but was not done in the house of Hashem from this money. Sipos kesef mizamros mizrakos chatzotzros, various types of instruments, and bowls and symbols, these were not, the money for those things was not, kol kli kesef v'kli zav, all the golden utensils and the silver utensils were not made min hakesef hamuva beis Hashem, from the money that was brought to the house of Hashem. The money was not used to make utensils or to make instruments. That's not what the money was for. Kilo samalachayit nuhu, for it was given to those doing the work, the chizkuvo es beis Hashem, and they used it to strengthen the house of Hashem. Those things was a different front. This was specifically for the upkeep, the maintenance of the building. It was a building fund. Yeah.
So was there any type of halacha to make sure these people were not tame coming in to do the work?
Yeah. If you were going to the Beis HaMikdash, you had to be not tame. You had to be tame. Yeah. But a lot of the work can be done outside the Beis HaMikdash. You know, you could do work. You can form things or quarry stones and chisel the stones. All can be done elsewhere and then moved on site later.
Is somebody on the temple grounds 24/7?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
because it's an open thing here. It's to the right of, what was it, to the right of the menorah?
No, of the Mizbeach. Yeah. No, there were people there all the time. In fact, there are guards. The Kohanim and Levium guarded the Beis HaMikdash at night.
They locked
a part of it, and they also there were guards. There's a Mishnah that discusses where the Kohanim were guarding, where the Levim were guarding, and in fact there is one term in the Mishnah which there's a dispute about what the term means about the Levim. According to one explanation, they were archers. That there were Levim standing snipers. They were standing on the walls who were armed, who were archers, and they were
to protect the ground.
Yeah. That is according to one explanation in the Mishnah. That's not because of the money. That's not because of this money. That's because the Beis HaMikdash is a special place, and therefore you guard it.
Okay, so it was really an honor system. I mean, the Levium, nobody counted what their money came in.
It was put into the money in the box was counted, but right, there was no...
Right. Going into the box.
Yeah, that's right. Tez Zayin, not only was that an honor system, but v'lo yechashvu es ha'anashim asher yidnu es ha'kesef al yadam, and they did not make a calculation with the men that the money was given to them. What's that?
That's the point he was just saying, an honor system.
Yeah. La'seis la'osei to give to those who do the work, ki v'amunahim osim, for they did it faithfully. There was no need to look over their shoulders. When the money was given to do the work, when it was given to the general contractors, they were trusted, and they spent the money properly to get the work done.
Did they get paid?
They might have gotten paid. That's possible. I don't know if it was about. I assume they were paid. Mm-hmm. I assume they were paid. They're working. Yeah. And the last pasuk we're going to read tonight, because this is the end of the last pasuk of the Haftorah. Kesef asham v'kesef chatos lo yuvah beis Hashem. The money for an asham, a carbon asham, which is a type of sin offering, and the money of chatos, of a different type of sin offering, lo yuvah beis Hashem, would not be brought to the house of Hashem. La'kwanim yu, they would be go to the Kohanim. Now that pasuk is a cryptic pasuk, what exactly that means. So I'll explain that in a moment. Let's just first understand what's happening over here. You have a new issue, and that is the Beis HaMikdash needs maintenance. So people now give money towards that. So Yehoash set up a system which worked for the first 23 years of his reign, that it would not be that the money that was donated would go directly to the maintenance. Rather, the money that was donated would go to the Kohanim. And the Kohanim had the responsibility of making sure that the Beis HaMikdash was kept up properly. So let's think of the pros and cons of that system. Obviously, the drawback of that system is what ended up happening. What ended up happening is they stopped doing it. There's nothing to force them to do it. There's no oversight. The money is their money that's been given to them. And we have a concept that kidri debei shutfi lo chamimi v'lo kuriri, which means a pot that is a chalet that's owned by partners is neither hot nor cold. That's what the Gemara says, which means no one takes responsibility. No one says, I'm the one who has to do it. Because since we all have to do it, well, I think you're going to do it, you think I'm going to do it. Nobody takes responsibility. So if there's a crisis, it's getting cold, I'll start to stoke the flames so it doesn't get really cold. But I'm not going to put myself out there to make it really good, because that's not my problem, it's somebody else's problem. That's the problem when you have a partnership. So when you have the Kohanim as a whole who are responsible, it's not a single person, it's the Kohanim are responsible, so could be no one will do it. What's the advantage of the system? The advantage of the system is that the Kohanim have ownership of the Beis HaMikdash. After all, isn't the Beis HaMikdash the Kohanim's building? It's their building. Of course, we all have a right to it, but they're the ones who work there. They're the ones who live there. They're the ones who have to who have to be there and take care of the karbanos. So you create a system where they take ownership for their own building. Imagine that people talk about this all the time. You know that companies do this. Like you give your employees shares in the company, so they feel an ownership. So they want to build the company up, right? Now, even though they're only getting a small portion of whatever they build up, but they feel a sense of ownership. There's a sense of ownership over there. When you have a new shul or a new school, so the people who are involved in that, they feel a sense of ownership. They feel like, this is ours. We got to make it happen. And everybody rolls up their sleeves and everybody gets to work. And you can end up with a really beautiful system. What's the biggest complaint that all...
It becomes possessive now.
No, that's a problem. But I'm saying, what's the biggest complaint that all nonprofits have? There's not enough volunteers. There's no volunteerism. How come people don't volunteer, right? But in a new institution, they have an abundance of volunteerism. Because in a new institution, everybody's like excited. Okay. This is ours. We're building it. So there's a huge amount of volunteerism. It's as time goes on, and it just becomes an entitlement that there's an institution, so nobody volunteers anymore. It's not my institution. I'm a consumer. I get benefit from the institution, but it's not my institution, right? So by having the Kohanim be the ones who need to fix up the to do the Beit HaKavayis, to fix up the maintenance of the Beis HaMikdash, there's an ownership, and that ownership means that everything is taken care of. But the drawback is that eventually, and this happened after 23 years, there's a sense of it's not my problem. You know, it's my cousin's problem. It's my next neighbor's problem. It's not my problem. Like, yeah, you know, why should I do it? There's 12 other Kohanim. Why should it be me? Right? So once that started to happen, then he changed the system to what we're more used to, which is that there's a central fund. It is donated to that fund. It's put in the pushka. It is counted. And then it is, so people are hired and they take care of the Beis HaMikdash.
Didn't the Kohanim only serve 2 weeks a year?
That's to actually bring karbanos.
Oh, so where are they living?
Some of them live in various cities. Some live in Yerushalayim, but they live throughout Eretz Yisrael.
But for them to take their big amounts of money, they have to leave their families to deliver it. The logistics is tough.
I don't know. I don't know how much money we're talking about. So
they served a week or a month, a year or something?
They served a week every 24 weeks.
Week every
24
weeks?
Yeah. 1 week every
24
weeks.
The system was too perfect.
Now, even after they switched it to hiring people to do the work, they were very trusted, as it says over here, and they did the work faithfully, and it was done properly. The money being counted, where it says it was counted in Pasuk Yud Aleph and 11, it was counted by the Sofer HaMelech and the Kohen HaGadol. So the scribe of the king and the Kohen HaGadol, that they counted together. You see here two people counting the money together. The Gemara tells us that when there was a system of collecting tzedakah money that used to be done, when you had a Jewish city, so there was an expectation, a certain amount of money that had to be collected per person for tzedakah reasons. It wasn't a volunteer thing. You gave tzedakah when you wished. There was a tax. Everybody had to give money towards the rabbi's charity fund so that the poor people could be funded through that. So that money has to be collected. So the Mishnah says, and it's passed in the Shulchan Aruch, it's collected with two people. Two people collect the money because we don't want any accusations that somebody's pocketing some of the money. So you have two people collecting the money, which causes each one monitors the other one. So there's a little bit of an oversight. The last pasuk in this that we read in the Haftorah of Parsha Shkalim says that the money of an asham and the money of a chatas, two different types of sin offerings, would not be brought to the house of Hashem. They would be given to the Kohen. Now, that doesn't make sense at face value. If it's the money of an asham or the money of a chatas, then it's not given to the Kohen. It's used to buy a chatas and buy an asham. That's what it's used for. So what it means given to the Kohen? So, Yehoyada Kohen Gadol, Yehoyada Kohen Gadol, the Mishnah tells us, instituted the following rule. He actually darshened it. He expounded this from the Torah itself. He said like this. What happens if a person, this is not what he said, this is a given. Let's say I want to bring a carbon shlamim or a carbon ola. That's what I want to do. So I take some money. Animals cost money. I want to buy a bull. I want to buy a bull to bring as a carbon ola. Oh, a bull doesn't cost $5, right? A bull is an expensive thing. So I set aside $1,000 to buy a bull to bring as a carbon. I go to the market, and it turns out that the bull only costs $850. So I spend $850, buy my bull. It's used for my carbon ola. But I have $150 left. What happens to that money? It was designated for a carbon ola. Well, I'll use it for another carbon ola. Another time, I'll put it in my carbon account, and the next time I have to bring another carbon oil, I'll use it. It's available. It can be used. But a carbon ola can be brought voluntarily, and a carbon shlamim can be brought voluntarily. A carbon asham and a carbon chatas cannot be brought voluntarily. Those are sin offerings. In fact, we hope that you never have to bring one. Now, practically speaking, people do bring them. But if, God forbid, I have to bring a carbon chatas, and the same thing happens, I set aside money to buy myself a sheep for a carbon chatas, and now a sheep is less expensive than a bull, so I set aside money for a sheep, and I set aside $500, and it turns out it only costs $450. Now there's $50 left over. What happens then to $50? I can't set it aside for another carbon because a chatas is not a voluntary carbon. So what happens to that money? So Yehoyada Kohen Gadol, being the great Talmud Chacham that he was, which is an understatement, he was the greatest of his generation, so he figured out from the Torah what should happen with that money. And since this is all about what happens to money, the Beis HaMikdash, that's why this pasuk is here. And what he figured out is that money should be used to buy a carbon ola, but not a carbon ola that you bring yourself, not my carbon ola, but rather it should be used to buy a carbon ola that would be used in the Beis HaMikdash to be brought as a communal offering in the event that no other carbon is being brought. Because it is considered to be degrading that the Mizbeach, that the altar, would just be sitting there and nothing's happening. The altar should be something which is used all the time. There should be carbonos being brought all day long. So if there's a lull in the action, there's no carbonos. No one's here bringing carbonos. So what happens? So then the Kohanim bring what is called Kitz HaMizbeach. Kitz HaMizbeach means they bring an Ola, a carbon Ola, just because no carbonos are being brought. That money comes partially from the money that was pledged for a Chatas or for an Asham that was left over. That's what the money is used for. So that's what it means over here in Pasuk Zayin, verse 17, Kesef Asham Chesef Chataos, money that had been pledged for an Asham, or money that had been pledged for a Chatas, and now it's extra. It doesn't need to be used for an Asham or for a Chatas. Lo Yuva Beis Hashem, it should not be brought and used for the maintenance of the Beis HaMikdash. That money is not used for the maintenance of the Beis HaMikdash because that money was designated for a carbon. You can't use carbon money to fix the Beis HaMikdash. So what do you do with that money? La Kohanim Yu, goes to the Kohanim. What does it mean it goes to the Kohanim? It means it's brought as a carbon, as I mentioned, an Ola. But the rule is that a carbon Ola, what happens to a carbon Ola? A carbon Ola is completely burned, right? A carbon Ola is totally burned. What happens to the hide of a carbon Ola? It's not burned. A carbon ola is completely burnt, but not the hide. What happens to the hide? That goes to the Kohanim. The Kohanim, one of the benefits the Kohanim get is they get the hides of the carbon ola. So that's what it means here. La'kohanim yu goes to the kohanim. It doesn't mean that the money goes to the kohanim. It means the money goes to a carbon ola where there is a hide that will go to the kohanim. And that hide is worth money. So that was one of the things that the kohanim would get. There's a fringe benefit that they would get from the karbanos, is they got the hide of the carbon ola. So that's what it means over here. And this was something the Mishnah says, Zeh medrash darash Yehoyada Kohen Gadol. This was expounded upon by Yehoyada Kohen Gadol. He's the one who figured out this rule that the leftover money from an asham or from a machatas goes to an ola, which is used in the mizbeach when nothing else is being brought, and the hide goes to the kohanim. Okay, so you see, as I told you at the outset, there's no drama over here, right? There's no intrigue, there's no murders, there's no adultery, and there's no idolatry, and there's no, you know, this person tried to get that person, and there's no rebellion, and there's no, it's a perek that deals with 40 years of growth of serving Hashem. And what do we talk about? Fixing up the Beis HaMikdash, the money the Beis HaMikdash, what happens to the money that a person has left over from a carbon, chatas, a carbon, right? This is a complete departure from everything we've had in the Navi, right? It's not even the Nisim that were performed by Elisha or by Eliyahu and Avi. This is, it's dealing with minutia of the Beis HaMikdash. That's what the reign of Yehoash was for 40 years. Unfortunately, as I said, there's going to be something that's going to go wrong at the end, but for 40 years, this is what it was about. This is what Klal Yisrael were involved in. They were involved in the Beis HaMikdash, in Karbanos, which is why, at the very beginning of the Perek, it tells us, what was the one problem? People were offering Karbanos on Bamos, which was a problem. It wasn't idolatry, they were offering Karbanos to Hashem. People were involved with Karbanos, but that's a little too involved, right? Because they were offering it at home rather than bringing it to the Beis HaMikdash. That's a problem. So, but this is what the country was focused on. They were doing good things. They were growing. They were focused in the Beis HaMikdash. That's what the Kohanim were focused on. That's a good thing. And that's really due primarily to Yehoyada Kohen Gadol, because it's his guidance and his mentorship. And of course, Yehoash was the king. But unfortunately, when Yehoyada Kohen Gadol dies, we're going to see that Yehoash is going to do something wrong, and it will cost him his life. And then Hashem, we'll talk about that next time. But that is, this is the, it's like, it's unbelievable. When you read through, when you get to this, when you hear this Haftorah in Parsha Shkolim, when you hear this Haftorah and you read it, so if you're not looking at it in the context of Malachim, so you think like, okay, there are other prakim like this in Malachim, but there aren't. With the exception of the actual building of the Beis HaMikdash, way back in Malachim Aleph, those prakim that dealt with all the details of Shlomo Melech building the Beis HaMikdash, that was pretty detailed. But this type of thing where you have 40 years of just discussing, you don't have anything like this. This was a special lull in all of the different things that go on in Malachim.
I needed it. Yeah.
but remember, it's 40 years. Okay. Right? We did it in one night. That's it. We're going to go on to some next week's not going to be so nice.
So good leaders need good people.
Right, right.
Instability,
right. It was a good time.
So you didn't have to talk about
murder. They couldn't stand that it was so good.
No,
it was. Could this be a chicken for the 40th election in Israel?
I don't know. He's not the only one to rule for 40 years. I don't know.
You said the sin offering and the guilt offering, they were demanded. You didn't bring it voluntarily. I don't understand.
If a person did a sin,
yes,
they are required, they're obligated to bring.
So now they came to their door and said, they saw you had now, witnesses, they saw you had a sin.
Even if they did, what the point is, you can't voluntarily bring one. You can't say, you know, I'd like to bring a sin offering. Okay. If a person sinned, they have to bring one.
Well, it would make sense that you couldn't save that money for the next sin because the hope would be that you wouldn't sin again.
That's correct. Right.
So then I have another question. You said if you pledged your land and the Kohen could sell the land and use the money, do you get that your land back at Yogel?
So that is spoken about in it depends what kind of land it is. Generally speaking, you don't get it back. Once it's pledged to the Beis HaMikdash and sold, then you lose it.
Tough pledge.
Right. Oh, but you would know going into it.
Yeah. Right. I mean, you know, we'd have to think about that.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to stop a little early tonight.
Thank you very much. For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.